Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest today is RFERL senior correspondent Robert Colson. Welcome, Rob. Thanks for being on the show again.
Thanks for having me again, Steve.
All right. Two themes this week. One is Vladislav Surkov's possible departure from the Kremlin after all these years. And the other is Putin's constitutional changes, the proposed changes that it seems may be fully approved by the end of April. In any case, it's happening fast. I'm not sure whether there will be any substantial new information this week, but I want to kind of take stock of what we know now and what we don't know. There's still a lot of the latter. And some analysts say that's the point, to keep people guessing. I guess, both in the elite and everywhere else. But at the risk of falling for that bait, I'll point out that after Putin's State of the Nation address, it appeared that the presidency was going to be substantially weakened under the amendments. But when the Kremlin submitted the proposed amendments to the State Duma, expectations were adjusted because the presidency still looks very strong. For one thing, the amendments say the president, quote, forms the State Council, whose status is to be determined by separate legislation. And there's nothing in them that suggests the State Council or its chief will be above the president in the hierarchy of power. So that's led some observers to say it looks like Putin may actually be getting ready to go. The idea being, well, if the State Council is not above the president, then, you know, he would be inferior. He'd be subordinate to the president if it ends up that way. So, you know, the idea is he actually getting ready to step away after ensuring that there's a system in place that he could count on, both to pretty much continue his policies and also guarantee his security, his wealth, and so forth. Now, despite the uncertainty about the State Council's status, my best guess at this point is that he plans to use this as a perch from which to remain in the thick of things, but also sort of above it all. And that he'll decide kind of later, kind of on the fly, whether he thinks he needs to continue to really rule or wants to or can afford to, or more just to monitor things from the State Council. Rob, any thoughts about this? What's your main take from the developments at this point?
Well, I'd like to go back to your initial point about keeping people guessing, which I think is right on the money. And you have to give Putin a sort of credit as a political player here because on the one hand, he seems to be moving with alacrity and determination and really quickly toward some specific goal, and yet at the same time keeping so many options open that it's impossible for even people who are following it very closely to see where he's ultimately aiming to be.
Exactly.
I think you're right about the State Council. That's certainly something to keep an eye on. It's never really been a locus of power before, and it's always been sort of a PR thing. So the fact that all of a sudden it's going to become an official constitutional governing organ is already in itself pretty significant. Another thing I would keep an eye on as going forward is I think Putin follows the rule of thumb that keeping control of appointments, of political appointments, is the key to keeping power. It's sort of the old Stalinist thing about this cadre решает, this staffing decides everything.
Right.
I think Putin will try to keep as many of those levers under his control as possible. The parallel between or the potential dual power that the amendments set up between the president and the head of the State Council, I mean, it could signal that he is planning some sort of partnership with a younger person going forward. It's just so hard to tell. Another thing that surprised me about the whole thing, just take one more point, is we're talking about a problem that really isn't going to emerge until 2024, and yet Putin is moving so quickly already at the beginning of 2020. Which is another reason to believe that anything could happen. I mean, they're moving so quickly with amendments that it's not even out of the realm of possibility that they could do another round of amendments next year, if and pretending that the current amendments were not satisfactory and then going toward his real goal
right
later.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the speed is something that is surprising, or maybe the speed isn't surprising everybody, but the fact that it's gotten started now. I mean, most people were talking about maybe 2021 at the earliest, to where we would get some hints about what's going on. Another thing you mentioned, the kind of this dual power possibility, he would use that. And I think he sort of set out quite a red herring by mentioning that issue, I think, over the weekend, subsequent to submitting the amendments to the Duma. He used a gathering with students to say that to have somebody above the president, in a position formally above the president, would be dual power, amount to dual power, and that would be ruinous for Russia. I think, you know, there, and he was at, the question was about a mentor, as they have, I believe it was said in Indonesia, a mentor for the new president during a transition. So specifically, he was ruling that out. But of course, that leaves plenty of room for informal arrangement of that kind, which, you know, arguably he put in place when Medvedev was president. And so, you know, by sort of ruling that out, he's trying to, again, say the president's going to be strong, you know, don't question that. But at the same time, there's lots of room for him to take a position where he would both have some formal power of decision making and also informally be able to pull the levers. So and of course the State Council, you know, again, all the decree or all the proposed amendment says, I believe, is that it's formed by the president. So that does leave a lot of details to be determined by the separate legislation on that. And I think you make a very good point that, you know, there could be a second round or third round, or, you know, there could be more changes coming, in part based on, you know, how things are working. And, of course, the way this is being pushed through kind of shows, you know, it's not something he's making a play of saying the people will have a power to eventually, you know, to kind of have a final say on this, but I believe the way it's going to work is that the vote among Russian voters on the amendments will be held after they're actually approved by the Duma, and in fact, maybe even after they're signed by Putin. So there's not a lot of room really for the people to have their say. Now, let's move on to the other topic, which it's another one about which I think little is actually known at this point, is a somewhat smaller issue. An associate of Vladislav Surkov said late last week that Surkov, he's a longtime Kremlin figure who in recent years has been a presidential aide involved in policy on Ukraine during the war. Is stepping down and leaving the government altogether. The associate, who's a political analyst, said that the reason was a change in Russian policy on Ukraine. As usual with Surkov, there's a lot of kind of mystery and, you know, deliberate apparently mystery about it. Putin's spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, issued a kind of non-denial, saying that there was no decree on Surkov's departure and he was not aware of it. And that there's no change of policy on Ukraine. Also, somewhat annoyingly, Surkov was said to be planning to spend a month meditating and then to tell everybody what was behind his alleged decision. I guess the idea is that we're supposed to be waiting with bated breath. Rob, any idea what might be going on here and whether we should even be paying attention to this at all?
Yeah, well, the idea of Surkov disappearing for a month is amusing. You almost got the feeling that he's going to drop an album when he comes back in a month. You know, he's known for his poetry and that's his strange writings, his novels and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
One important thing to remember with Surkov is he's been sort of in and out of the administration, the government, over the past many years. But he's always been quite influential. And he can, it could be one of those things where they want him in some sort of position where he's outside the government and able to speak, quote unquote, more freely, mm-hmm. to sort of guide public perception of these changes. I certainly would totally downplay or almost to the point of disregarding the idea that he has some sort of policy disagreement over Ukraine or anything else. The role that he recently played in Abkhazia, where the government was in huge crisis, and he went down there and basically spent 15 minutes on the phone and solved the whole crisis and went back. And he is the Kremlin's figure for managing domestic political policy and the domestic political scene. And by domestic, I mean the areas that the Kremlin considers to be parts of Russia, which includes, say, places like Abkhazia, Transnistria, mm-hmm. Parts of eastern Ukraine. And he's been so successful in keeping the domestic opposition in Russia divided and weak, in guiding policies in these sort of near broad regions that Russia considers to be its homeland, that, or the Kremlin, I should say, considers to be its homeland.
Right.
That it's hard for me to imagine him not continuing in that role, especially as this transition crisis comes closer and closer.
Yeah, that's interesting. Those are good points. I think one thing that maybe the Kremlin is doing with this is sort of raising hopes that, okay, you know, he's sort of a hardliner. He had the talks with Volcker about eastern Ukraine, and, you know, Volcker kind of got nowhere. He was, you know, with Surkov on that. So the idea that he's going because of a change in policy might suggest that, you know, Russia's getting ready to, you know, to make some compromises on the war in eastern Ukraine. Now, you know, I think there's no way of, you know, my guess is that if that's what is meant to be being conveyed, that's really just a feint. You know, as you say, you know, it's hard to imagine that it could be an actual policy disagreement, even if it's sort of set up and portrayed that way. So, you know, I think it's really hard to know what's going on. I mean, one thing, another reason why, you know, maybe he's had these two, I think he wrote two in the past couple of years, big articles about Russia. And one of them was the idea that 100+ years of solitude, I think it was, and that sort of sanctions were here to stay. Russia was going to tough it out and didn't need the West. So, you know, him kind of going, the idea of that might raise hopes or the thought that Russia is, you know, wants to make a compromise and is seeking to, you know, get rid of the sanctions or tone down the sanctions. So,
yeah, I saw nothing else in Putin's speech, for example, which I followed quite closely, to indicate at all that Putin is thinking of, you know, that the timeline for improving relations with the West is anywhere except for very remote. And this idea that moving Surkov out is a small, tiny, minuscule step toward better relations with the West, I think, is not going to work. It sort of reminds me of when Rogozin used to be the head of the Russian ambassador to NATO, and everybody thought that when he left that post, that was a sign that Russia was ready to sort of mend its fences with NATO, and of course the exact opposite has happened since then.
That is a very good point. No, you know, very you know, warning against reading too much too much into anything like this. All right, let's wind it down for this week. Rob, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
All right, tune in next week for another edition of The Week Ahead in Russia, and please take a look at my weekly article on events in Russia, which runs on Fridays. Thanks for listening.